Welcome to Experience Health Radio, presented by Cingala Consulting. Cingala Consulting was founded on a basic principle that the patient should be at the center of every decision made by a healthcare organization. Our mission is to help organizations realize their investments in technology, employees, clinicians, and most importantly, their patients. We bring together industry leaders on air to engage in conversations about the patient experience with a focus on the developments, integrations, and optimizations in areas that have the greatest opportunity for improvement in healthcare today. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'm AJ Malaraño, President of Cingala Consulting and host of Experience Health Radio. As always, we're excited to share with our audience our experiences and our guest experiences live every week at 11 a.m. Central Time and on demand through our website and downloaded through iTunes. Today's topic is an exciting but challenging one, branding after a merger or acquisition. In my prior life, I was fortunate enough to be part of a rebranding exercise at the organization I was part of where they changed the name. They changed everything from the logo to the color, and it really gave me an appreciation for all that is involved with doing such or undertaking such a task where it involves everything from signage outside of your buildings to your websites to even the, I remember a funny story of the carpet had our logo on it when you would walk in the front door, and making sure that everything was synced and rolled out at the same time. But probably the most important aspect of it was the communication plan. The plan where we had to communicate to our patients, to our community, as well as our employees, of what we were doing, why were we doing it, and most importantly, would anything change? Would they come to work in a different place? Were the services that we offer different? And then how did social media play into all of this? And in today's day, social media is sometimes very positive for an organization and also can be a challenge. And how do you head that off and make sure that you're in front of any issues that the community or the patients are seeing with the name change? And we're fortunate enough today to have Lenia Chan from the Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York join us. Lenny is a System Chief Communications Officer and Chief of Access Services for the Mount Sinai Health System in New York City. As the CCO of the health system, he directs marketing and communications, branding and digital social media services for 7 hospital campus and the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. In the access service part of his job, he leads initiatives for managing all the various ways patients can access the health system, whether that's through the phone, in person, or online. During his time, Mr. Chan also was responsible for planning and implementing Mount Sinai's comprehensive rebranding effort that's centered on the launch and rollout of their dynamic new logo and their brand platform. This all happened in December 2012, which was very quickly after that, followed by the rebranding of what is now the combined Mount Sinai Health System, which has just begun after the merger with Continuum. Lenny is a fellow and alumni of the Wharton School of Business, where he taught entrepreneurial research and lectures internationally as an adjunct faculty member of the City University of Hong Kong and the University of Macau. Lenny is a very close friend and colleague of mine. I am absolutely honored, Lenny, that you joined us today, and welcome to the show.
Hey, AJ, thanks for having me.
So, Lenny, to start this all off, tell us a little bit about how Mount Sinai is situated in New York and what the landscape looks like.
Sure. It's a tricky question because Mount Sinai is also the name of the new health system. But I'll start by telling you, pre-combination, what Mount Sinai is, Mount Sinai Hospital, and the Icahn School of Medicine. So we're in an academic medical center, 1,171 beds. We consist as a medical center of both the medical school and the Mount Sinai Hospital, which was established in 1852. And it sits on the border. If you know New York City, it sits right on the borderline between East Harlem and the Upper East Side, which is really the dividing line of some of the richest and poorest zip codes in the city, if not the nation. We also just represent one of the most diverse patient populations in the U.S. And we've recently, just as a school and hospital, we're top 20 for NIH and U.S. News, but we've just recently gone through a combination with Continuum Health Partners. And, so I'll translate basically what that now means for, Mount Sinai as a brand and the Mount Sinai Health System. So we have combined with 7 member hospitals. Just brief background to set the stage for your listeners. That includes Beth Israel Medical Center, which is an 856-bed institution established in 1889 on the Lower East Side. Beth Israel Brooklyn, 212-bed institution. Mount Sinai Hospital, which we just discussed, established in 1852. Mount Sinai Queens, a 235-bed acute care facility. The New York Eye and Ear Infirmary, another global brand in the marketplace, established in 1820. Roosevelt Hospital, 505 beds, 1871. And St. Luke's, established in 1847, that's a 523-bed institution in West Harlem. And then obviously, the school, the Icahn School of Medicine, which is a world-renowned medical school. So we have now the benefit of, over 800 years of dedication to this community with some major brands coming together to form the Mount Sinai Health System. And what that basically equals is about, over 3,500 beds, over 35,000 employees, 18,000 babies being delivered in our health system a year, over 2.6 million outpatient visits, 6,600 physicians, 500,000 ER admissions. So it's a great story of a combination of these institutions which have come together to focus on healthcare delivery.
Lenny, over 3,500 beds. I mean, that is a monster system. Where does that compare to other systems, both in New York and nationally?
I think there's some larger systems out there in regard to beds, but when you look at this marketplace, which is one of the most competitive landscapes, right? We're the largest in New York City. We're the largest in the New York Metro area, and when you look at that number, right, 3,500 beds, but you think about the where we're headed as in healthcare in the U.S., the really big number that you kind of think about is over 2.5 million outpatient visits, right? An astonishing number. We are the largest New York City health system. There's two great academic medical centers right here within walking distance. So it's a really interesting environment to have to brand and compete and market within.
So Lenny, taking all of that and knowing that you're spread out around the New York metro area, and then when you introduce, let's first take the new logo and that brand that you did prior to the combination. How do you manage that on a day-to-day basis where you really can't be everywhere at the same time?
Yeah,
more of your day-to-day,
Yeah, it turned out, it was interesting that we had just gone through our branding exercise with a master brand strategy for future growth that started in December of 2012. And it was perfectly staged for growth. At the time, we had an idea that we might do this combination. We weren't, I'm sure when it would happen or how it would happen. But, no matter what the growth strategy was, we established a master brand strategy with a master logo and a brand architecture that was designed to eliminate, you know, probably over 500-600 rogue logos that were in the marketplace. There was a complete loss of the prior Mount Sinai brand.
500-600 logos?
Yeah, probably, you know, probably more. I mean, on any given audit, we could have probably documented over 200 plus, but you know, if you went on, you know, just Google Images and you looked at the gross violation of our brand over the years, you know, we had basically every you know, Oregon word type font, fruit, I mean, anything you can imagine, next to our iconic blue box. And, you know, it took a long time for that to happen. There was also two different major logos separating the school and hospital. And we looked to clean that up, and, you know, we could speak definitely more in detail about it, but a lot of those solutions came from, you know, top-down directives and support, you know, brand centers being set up digitally, which put control mechanisms in place. To be honest, you know, I really braced for a storm when we launched, and it ended up being, you know, not even a hundredth of what I expected it to be. It actually worked. We actually were able to pull it off, and there was a full embrace of the brand and the logo, you know, and every day it gets better, you know, as people see it more in application and use. So there is a single now master logo, master brand for the health system, and even prior to the combination as well.
Do you think, Lenny, that was actually something that was welcomed with open arms because of all of the different logos people had difficulty internally, I'm speaking, knowing what logo do I use? How do I manage that?
Yeah, now in hindsight, yes. I would say building up to it, no. You know, building up to the thought of doing that, you know, there was not a lot of opposition, I have to say. People were suspect. People questioned it. People didn't, you know, understand it because, you know, you have to be very careful not to create a logo exercise or a visual exercise without context and without a platform and without a communication strategy. So, you know, the right. masses will look at it as a logo from our world, and I'm sure from the world of your listeners who do this for a living or who have done it before, that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, the strategy and execution of the communication platform and, you know, reworking your mission and vision and creating a brand promise and exactly how you're going to roll that out, that's really what makes the difference. So, you know, right. I'm happy to say that we were able to execute that. And once we did, what made a difference was making sure we didn't budge. It was very important that special treatment wasn't given, that we did not budge in those first 2 to 3 weeks when people challenged us and said, hey, I want to do this to the logo, I want to do that, I want to use a different font. You know, being able to refer them to a digital brand center and having that architecture really made a tremendous difference for success.
Talk a little bit about that digital brand center. What is that, and,
sure.
and what do people use it for?
Sure. So if you could imagine, and, you know, this isn't something that just, you know, we've done. It's been used in industry forever, and I'm sure some other major brands in you know, healthcare have done this, but we created the architecture, we established a brand council, you know, and we made the rules, you know, what are our core entities, you know, the school, the hospital, you know, Mount Sinai Doctors, you know, the brand of our physicians, you know, under that, what are the various layers across the use of departmental institutes, owned facilities, affiliated organizations, and we created on paper this hierarchy, this brand architecture that we then translated into a digital brand center online that had those rules intact. So somebody could not only go there for information, somebody could not only go there as a communication platform for our employees to read about why did we do this, what does it mean, what does the logo mean, how did we think of it, but it tells you the exact colors. It allows you to download your PowerPoint presentations, your business cards, your stationery, specs for a vendor, for signage, the correct use of the brand, the correct use of fonts, and depending on if you're designing something for a department or if you're a physician or your hospital versus school, it sets you up with exactly the identity that you need to use. So you can imagine the impact of you being able to redirect the masses to this digital brand center with this logic and rules in place that stops phone calls and stops emails and otherwise would create a break in the system that we no longer had to do. So it was not only an informational and communication vehicle about what we were doing, but you got things from it without having to wait for correspondence or emails or a phone call back.
And is that available to all employees and the general public through your website, or is it sign-in only type of thing?
It's sign-in only for employees. So, you know, we've put a lot of controls in place to protect the brand, and we've learned that from the history of failing of protecting it. So we won't make those mistakes again.
That's a great idea. So rolling all of this out, having your digital brand center in place, obviously managing this, executing on the plan, is really where everything comes together. How is the Mount Sinai health system organized within their marketing advertising department? Do you guys, is it in-house? Do you use a combination of agencies? How's that structured?
Yeah, so about 24 months. So the structure, the actual structure is we have a vice president of digital and social media and a vice president for marketing and communications. So that's the basic structure, and they report up to me as the communications officer. But what falls within those two groups is the following. You know, within what was traditional media is obviously public relations, crisis management, advertising, pubs, you know, communications. And then within digital, which was new, and I'll speak a little bit more about that, is digital strategy, web development, mobile development, SEO, video, social media, and content management. So everything that I just said to you, with the exception of advertising creative, is done organically. We made a pretty aggressive movement towards digital and social media about 26, 27 months ago at a directive of our CEO and Dean, you know, to look at it as a differentiator to compete in the marketplace. It was cheap, scalable, smart, new, and, you know, we carved out areas from IT and content management and traditional media to develop what is now the Department of Digital and Social Media. So that was my first challenge that they charged me with, leaving, you know, really international business and biz dev to use more of an entrepreneurial approach towards putting a team together to execute against that. And that's what we did. We recruited people and built, you know, our team with organic growth in mind to protect our brand and to have, you know, Mount Sinai ID'd staff, you know, manage the digital footprint that we were building. And that is still true today. The one thing we knew then that we know now, and we've just engaged an agency, is for advertising. But outside of that, we have made the investment in people to really come in from startups, from industry, you know, the majority of which is from non-healthcare, to bring a different perspective and challenge the model to help us excel.
Good. All right, so now let's get to what everybody's interested in, is talk about, before we get into the post-merger, post-combination, talk about the highlights of the agreement with Continuum and Mount Sinai.
Sure. I mean, the rationale, you know, as in my intro, when I talk about those brands, you know, each of these institutions is a well-known, you know, very established historic brand. So we had these major brands, which were well-respected organizations, who initially came together to really, you know, discuss how to meet the challenge of the evolving, you know, healthcare landscape and how to partner. You know, and that partnership, that discussion, that preliminary discussion was, you know, look, how do we partner, you know, keeping the patient at the center of what we do, you know, not abandoning our DNA and you know, something that we've all been in business for you know, hundreds of years, How do we increase efficiencies and economies of scale? You know, how do we improve quality and outcomes? You know, expand access across the board to primary and specialty care. You know, to look at the growth of an ambulatory network and preventative care and primary care to try to ultimately keep patients out of the hospital and do the right thing, you know, from a real primary preventative focus. You know, what is the collective, you know, intelligence and energy to manage large populations? And, you know, to look at our combined teams, how do we complement each other to provide low-cost, high-quality care? And then obviously the school. The school brought just this tremendous umbrella of you know, an amazing platform of 4,000 faculty, 32 departments, you know, top 20 in NIH, top 20 in U.S. News, you know, to really create synergy across the health system and look at, you know, how to pull this off for real population management to remain competitive and to create new models, whether those are operational, financial, clinical, or scientific, you know, models of care to address the quickly changing healthcare landscape. I mean, that was the origin of the discussion, and it was a perfect marriage between our institutions and how to complement one another.
So it sounds like you guys had a lot of conversations together as one organization going forward. You know, walk us through some of those communication, marketing,
sure.
and the planning efforts, you know, involved.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, you know, we were, you know, look, we were flying blind for a while because there are obvious, you know, regulations in place that, you know, that are in place to really prevent us from speaking to one another a lot. So I have to say a lot of the planning was done in a silo. You know, we were planning, they were planning, just from the marketing communications planning perspective, right, from how we were going to pull off the branding. And, you know, the Mount Sinai team was planning, the Continuum Health Partners team was planning. You know, we're all now a combined entity. So that's, again, you know, one of these obvious, you know, efficiencies and you know, marketing and IT, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, what really happened was we broke it into, you know, three phases, right? So the big three phases in a combination or a merger is, you know, the you know, HSR filing to signing a definitive agreement, you know, our definitive agreement to the closing, and then what we do post-closing. So it wasn't really until phase three, which was post-closing, that we really got to dive deep and do strategic thinking and planning. And we had to do that quickly, but in the marketing comm world and in the branding world, usually, you know, that due diligence is done way ahead of time, and it's the most important thing to do. So there were some restrictions which made it an extra challenge, but the risks we took and the bets that we took worked out. So if you can imagine, we were planning and communicating as two separate entities completely. In the, you know, first phase, which was, you know, the HSR filing to our definitive agreement. So Mount Sinai was having town halls, we were emailing employees, talking to our trustees, you know, and Continuum was doing the same. So it was kind of like running side by side with a communication plan and strategy about what was happening. You know, then there was the definitive agreement signing, you know, to the entire phase months later of the closing. And again, that was more of the two entities running side by side and communicating individually as the respective institutions about what was going on. Towards the end of that phase, you know, right, you know, just prior to closing, we were then allowed and able to, you know, look into strategy more. We had synergy meetings. We met our colleagues and teams with executive leadership to begin planning of integration of staff and how we were going to communicate about this. And then we ran forward from the post-closing stage, which for us was basically the end of September. So this is all very recent, just months ago.
Right.
We were fortunate because the new name is Mount Sinai Health System. We were fortunate because we just went through this branding exercise for ourselves. So we were able to repurpose and replicate. And not only that, but our team just went through, you know, 2 years of education on this. So we were able to quickly right. execute it at that time. But those were the three big phases that everybody should really know about and develop a communication plan and strategy against how to communicate and who to communicate to. You know, the other big go ahead.
Was there a theme, Lenny, when, you know, prior to everything being signed, and I understand you guys are in silos, you're doing your communication, they're doing theirs, but was there some kind of overarching theme of maybe, you know, improve patient access or here, you know,
yeah.
I guess the justification for doing that?
Yeah, within like phase two, as we were allowed to speak more to each other and create these synergy teams and meetings, the leaders of those teams met, executives met, and obviously, you know, we agreed on what our talking points were, and we made sure that, you know, we were saying the same thing. I mean, we were both getting into this for the same reasons. We agreed on what we were doing. The executive leadership teams, you know, synergized and were great. So it was an easy exercise for us, but absolutely, you know, at that point, any internal communications and, you know, preparing for external communications, obviously we looked at together and said, you know, does this make sense together? Let's, you know, just make sure we're speaking with a single voice. Like any branding communication exercise, you know, once ready to amplify these messages, we had to make sure it was a single visual system, a single logo, a single platform, you know, and a single voice that we were communicating about.
So as we're getting close to the end of our show, what's the trick, Lenny? What, I mean, it seemed like this, having conversations with you throughout this process, I know that there was a lot going on behind the curtain, and of course you never wanted to show anybody that, but it just seemed very smooth, and very organized, very succinct with your other organization. What's the trick behind this? What can other organizations learn from you guys?
I think, you know, just getting the CEO behind what you're doing and the board is critical. Establishing a brand council was something that, you know, at first in this environment, I knew that it needed to happen. I knew that it needed to take place. But I was, you know, I had concerns about having too many cooks involved. But that was critical to buy in, you know, a collaborative team, an interdisciplinary team of, you know, physician-driven and nurse-driven and operational leadership who are all sitting in a room monthly discussing the issues that can come up and then quickly fixing them. Establishing a strategy, not tactics, and people have to understand that difference between long-term strategic planning and then just tactical response to a problem. Over-communicating, which I will say I believe in it. We've tried our best at continuing to, and we're still, you know, look in month two or three of what's going to be a 3 to 5 year process. I hope we do better at that. I'm not going to say everything we did was smooth and perfect. It was very difficult. We still have a lot to do and a lot to learn from, and I'm sure a lot of hopefully small mistakes to make, but over-communicating is critical. Rationalizing what you're doing is key. And, you know, just engagement and interaction with staff. So the next big phase of what we're doing is we brought in a colleague from inside who came from the hotel management industry who understands employee engagement. And, you know, we have a workforce of now 35,000 brand ambassadors who need to fully understand what we're doing. And we do not expect that to happen overnight. A visual exercise will never fix that. That's just the looks like part. You know, the big takeaway is how to develop a plan about the acts like part. How do you really develop a plan to make sure people know why they're coming to these combined entities to serve ultimately the patient and the mission of your organization?
Right.
You know, that's the advice. And make sure you set the rules up front and don't sway. You cannot compromise.
Sway. Yeah, no. You know, it just seems like the common theme to every major initiative within an organization, whether that be an acquisition, a merger, a rebranding, the EMR implementation, contact center, is really around the leadership putting in place the structure and the belief of here's what we want to do and sticking with that.
That's right. You've got to be immovable. You know, it doesn't mean you can't be flexible when there's a real rationale and a real problem that needs to be addressed. You have to create a flexible platform. And that's one thing I failed to mention. This platform is so flexible that when we were able to follow through in a combination of 7 other institutions and a medical school and execute that in less than a year, because we created a model that was flexible with rules, but it was flexible enough to adapt.
that's very critical to success.
Yeah, that's perfect. Lenny, thank you so much for taking time out of your obviously incredibly busy schedule. This will conclude our show for today. Please join us next actually, we're off next week, so the first week of December. Join us for when our topic will be outsourcing contact center functionality. Thanks again, Lenny.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care. Thank you for joining us today, and please visit us at cingolaconsulting.com to learn more about how we can help your organization realize their investments. Remember to always put the patient at the center of every decision you make.